Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, welcome everyone to another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, Gina Gaudio-Graves, the Dean and Founder of Directions University at directionsu.com, calling to you live this week from Bonita Springs, Florida, as I do each week on Tuesdays at noon Eastern. And I have really been looking forward to today's show. We have got a great show in store for all of our listeners. We have my co-host, Linda Feinholz, the founder of Breakthrough Academy at breakthroughbydesign.com. Linda's calling in live this week from Los Angeles. Hello, Linda.
Hello, Gina. I'm here with my Brenda Vaccaro voice because the allergies are so thick in Los Angeles right now.
And if
I suddenly start on a coughing and sneezing jag, I will mute my line. But I am so looking forward to having Don Schreffler join us today. You and I have been so excited, like little kids going, oh, Don's coming. So for our listeners, one of the reasons Gene and I have been so excited by having Don join us is because we love bringing guests who both provide solutions to the challenges we're each dealing with in growing our businesses, but also can talk about not only the solution, but what the learning was for themselves in growing their businesses. And Don absolutely can join us in all of those aspects of the conversation today. So, Don, welcome aboard.
Thank you very much. Very kind introduction.
My pleasure.
Looking forward to it.
You know, Gina, you might want to share a little bit about what you and Don have been diving deep in, because I know we've got a full hour and we're going to go wandering down a lot of paths. In the show notes and in the announcements I sent out to folks, I really took it from this angle of so many people are spending time doing outdated things and doing things the hard way in trying to grow their business. And you're very involved with Don right now in creating, what shall I call it, new openings for business growth, both for each of your businesses and the customers that you're serving. So I'd love to have you set the frame for our conversation today.
Well, let me start out with explaining how Don and I actually came to know one another. Oddly enough, it's only been 2 short months, and I can barely believe it because it seems like we've known each other for a lot longer than 2 months, doesn't it, Don?
It's one of those things that you have to, you know, reflect on the fact that it has only been that long. It's pretty shocking, actually, yes.
And for our listeners, listen carefully because you're going to hear what it is to be being entrepreneurial.
So Don and I were both invited by other people to go to lunch with them. And the lunch was meant to be the two people that brought us with them talking about potential joint ventures that the two of them could be working on. So Don's there to support his partner. I'm there to support one of my mentees. We sit down to lunch. They each start to introduce the two of us. And I don't think they got another word in edgewise for almost 3 hours, right, Don?
Yeah, that's probably accurate.
And that whole 3 hours was Don and I just talking generally about marketing and internet marketing and our philosophies about things. And it was so incredible to see someone sitting on the other side of the table that had philosophies that were so aligned with everything I am about, because that doesn't happen very often. And to be able to have a very high-level conversation about strategies for marketing, for business, I don't have those kind of conversations very often. And that was how we started our relationship. And it's just been getting even more amazing ever since. Don't you agree?
I agree, and I would add, not just to have those conversations, but to be able to enjoy having them, where it's not just mercantilistic. It's not just about money. It's a certain excitement and enthusiasm when you have a kindred spirit and you realize, like, oh, wow, I don't have to try and craft my vocabulary properly here or make sure that I'm, you know, couching it in this or that. I can just speak freely and you'd understand and get it. It was, again, a pretty unusual experience for me as well.
And, you know, all three of us are teachers and problem solvers, and there's such a joy in actually being able to have the next level conversation where it's sort of like you're at the top of the ski slope and you strap on the skis and you're just going downhill for the sheer pleasure of the skiing and exploring ideas and, you know, sharing, understanding and learning.
And in the entrepreneurial model, you know, in the entrepreneurial model, to follow through with your metaphor, we've all learned that there are going to be trees, right? And if you can avoid the largest ones that are catastrophic and only brush against the ones that are going to bruise you, then you've had a pretty good run, all things considered.
What a great way to say it. So I'd love for our listeners to get at least an overview of the breadth of your background so that they can better understand how you really could help them. So can you explain a little bit about what you do in your business, what your business is all about, and some of your background?
Yeah, absolutely. My background, I've always enjoyed learning. So in college, I did a liberal arts approach, philosophy, history, you know, that sort of thing. I was in finance for quite a long time. I was an institutional bond broker for quite a while, and I was in the mortgage industry as a mortgage banker and had a mortgage branch as well. As a result of being really heavily involved in the mortgage industry, I started to seek out, as any business owner would, an opportunity for leverage in that business, and the leverage there was in marketing, right? Being able to have, you know, the mailman and the internet and everything else do my work, and became pretty adept at marketing in that particular niche. And as I studied it, of course, the principles and the tactics are largely applicable across the board. So ended up opening up a full-blown marketing company, marketing services company. And what we do, we had originally gotten into it in large part in a given niche. We were working in a niche where we were producing marketing materials and collateral and offers and, you know, monthly sales funnels and what have you for a given niche. In this case, it was the spa and salon niche. And in building that, we became very, very adept at outsourcing because we had a lot of work to do, and we became very adept. We did about 45,000 hours worth of outsourcing and had probably maybe 30, 35 people at one given time, you know, actively pursuing monthly activities for us. We determined that that process itself is an extremely useful one, but can't be done at scale unless it's built and designed for that. We partnered some time ago with a gentleman out of Thailand, my partner John, and we now have a organization where we have approximately 70 people doing marketing services of all different styles and formats. We do everything from stop motion video and website design to software design, APIs, plugins. We do search engine optimization, social media, retargeting, AdWords. We design sales letters, copywriting, yeah, marketing, funnel design and development, automated systems programming and development. So pretty much the whole gamut. We don't do mail fulfillment. Like, we're not doing actual physical mailing. We're not a fulfillment house. And we don't do, like, kind of virtual assistant work. We're more of a production house in that sense. Most of what we do now is white labeled. That means that we're doing it for other players in the market who are then presenting it to their end user as their own work, even though we've done the, you know, the actual heavy lifting and the fulfillment, which is fine. It's just another business model, and that allows us to do it at scale. We have, on average, probably 1,000, maybe 1,100 work orders at a given time, working through what I can only describe as a factory analogy of a machine that takes things in one side, you know, has precision and is engineered to produce those things on schedule, on scale, with a very, very little tolerance for anything less than straight lines, square corners, and what have you. So there are challenges with working with that, but basically we do all of the marketing services on a scaled basis. So we do individual things for a given business, or we can go to someone and, you know, embed in their coaching program and do 300 on-site, or rather 300 on-board for an SEO service, where we can bring on 300 people at a time. So we pretty much run the scale from small business to substantively larger business. I think about 4 or 5% of our business is Fortune 500 in terms of, you know, size and scale, plus or minus.
Wow.
One of the things that's really...
A little long-winded, but...
No, it's not that it's long-winded. I, you know, the picture as you were painting it, I was thinking about, you know, we have so many people who are entrepreneurial who will become aspirational and go, I want a company like that. But the company didn't get born like that. The company got born smaller. So let's
In fact, there's a lesson there.
Exactly.
Yeah, if you're interested, let me give you the lesson.
Please.
Okay. Okay, so several of them, but one of them is as follows. You know, everything's going to give. There's a certain give and take in everything, okay? So being a smaller business, let's say you had six people working together and you're a website custom design shop, okay? Well, one of the advantages to that is that you have tremendous flexibility, and flexibility is really important in business because you have that large account you've been looking for 6 months and you finally get a yes from them, and now they need something in 4 days. Well, what do? Well, you work more hours, you push another project, you call a good client, you say, hey, can I push this to Wednesday for Monday? And you create that space, and your business is for a certain period of time focused on that, and there's tremendous benefit provided for that, new relationship, profitability, et cetera. Okay? At the same time, the environment that fosters that, that allows for that flexibility, the very thing that makes you nimble and agile there, means that you also can't scale, right? You can't take 20 clients on at a time. Okay, so while you have flexibility, you have limitations to your growth, and you have very little leverage points in your business. There's not a lot of leverage that you can gain by systematizing to a very large degree. You're not large enough in any one thing to get some economies of scale. That's why you don't see, you know, 174 automobile manufacturers, right? You see a few of them, and you find Ford buying Volvo and Saab, right? Because Volvo and Saab themselves are so small, relatively speaking, even though they're massive companies, that they need an affiliation. The flip side is when you're looking to do things in a larger way, you have to realize that there's a certain business maturity in understanding your limitations. So, for example, if we have a client, we ran into a client recently with one of Gina's mentees who insisted that for a development job that needed to be done, it was software development, needed to be done in 6 days, we could do the job. But he insisted that he have a direct line of communication into our management structure to be able to basically ping them every hour to find out what was going on. Well, this is a high-profile client, but that's not how our system works. So we had to turn that business away, not because we couldn't do the business, but because we're so systems-driven, for good or ill, for plus or minus, that we have to realize that once we have systems and standards, we have to stick to them even when it's painful. And being able to stick to your systems and standards and your plan of action, your action items associated with that plan of action, even when there's opportunity that has to pass by or there's pain points that you have to engage, is a real important part of business maturity, I think. There's lessons to be gained from that because there's always more opportunity. They're like buses. They're going to come along again eventually. It's about being properly positioned for the opportunities that's right for you at that moment, I think, in part.
And it's about having clarity about the business you intend to be so that you've put your own structures in place to stop yourselves from chasing after bright, shiny objects. You've created a screening system that says, does it fit with the business model at this time we've said is the model we intend to use? It's so important.
Someone I respect as a marketing personality said, I'm going to paraphrase it, but distraction is the number one enemy of the entrepreneur. And that can be distraction that's self-created. It can be distraction that's allowed. It can be distraction that's facilitated. You know, I can be distracted by my emails from getting something that needs to be done, and I see emails popping up. Now, I can allow myself that distraction there. But your point of knowing sort of what lane you're in, knowing what your strengths and weaknesses are, is a really, really powerful revelation. And I say revelation with intent. It's not just an awareness. I would suggest to you that the notion of a capital S skill, right, like big picture skill, capital S, that is not just a learned, process. But if you have a natural inclination towards something, let's say you're naturally persuasive, or you're naturally orderly, or you're by definition, it's like kind of in your personality to be X way, and then you take that and you school and discipline and train and build that thing, now you've got a real skill with a capital S. So maybe for a, you know, engineer, there's a particular bent that they have in their personality, and they capitalize upon that by getting the rigorous training. Maybe for someone else, they're very persuasive, and they become a salesperson that's exceptionally good, not just because they're persuasive, but because they've learned their craft, they've studied it. And on an individual basis, if you take those strengths and then you apply them only to the largest opportunities that you have available to you, you know, you focus on those opportunities, you'll make tremendous headway. And so it goes as a business. You have that same thing, like your business DNA will say to you, you know, we're really good at this, or you find that in the marketplace that you're in, you're really adept at a given thing, right? Well, you know, school that, train that, build that up, and then leverage that into the largest opportunity you can find and push the opportunity cart with, like, the biggest and strongest, you know, engine that you have, which is something that you're both adept at and naturally inclined towards and trained in. And I think businesses can do that as easily as an individual can. Maybe not as easily, but certainly with that mindset, it transfers.
Right. And it's amazing how challenging it can be to learn that when you're first starting out as an entrepreneur. So often I see people who see all these opportunities and they're going to tackle all of them, even if it doesn't align with what their skills and strengths really are. What's helped
you
to learn that?
Pain, suffering.
Yeah. Me too.
Running into walls, frustration. I could go on, but I should say that because people talk about trial and error. Really, it's more trial and success. I think that the idea that's propagated by some people that you're going to just go and start at point A, and the straight line between A and B is the path that you're going to traverse, that is, I think, largely mythical. I don't personally remember almost any time where there wasn't something that came up on the path that, you know, either through bumping me or attracting me, right, or repelling me, I went left or right of center. You know, that always happens. And there's a certain wisdom in allowing for creative chaos, allowing for creative restructuring. So I think that to your question, like, how did you learn to let that happen? I think that understanding that opportunity isn't a one-time thing. There's an opportunity I have on my plate right now that's really one of the larger ones I've had in quite some time, and I'm excited about it. But I can't get so emotional about that that I allow it to get in the way of what is already working, right? And that's a classic entrepreneurial error, because the grass is always greener somewhere else. Who of us hasn't seen a speaker speaking from the stage, and you count the people there? Wow, there's 200 people here. They paid $3,000 a piece to be here. That's $600,000. They're working for 8 hours on the stage making $600,000. And they have no idea that that person may actually be going negative on that event. with the intent of, you know, having some future income down the road. Or they may have needed 300 to break even, and they've got 200. So now they've got this new perspective that may or may not be accurately assessed, and they're going to start going off and becoming a speaker or becoming a this or becoming a that. There's a certain lack of, I don't want to say maturity, there's a certain lack of discipline in that. But you do that enough, and things tend to not be ever as good or as bad as they appear at first. You start to realize, like, hey, you know what? I'm gonna find something that works and do more of that. Now, one thing I will say, Gina, that I have said, I think this is really in the last, I'd say even in the last 6 or 8 years, I've seen the truth of this much more heavily evidenced, but to try and do one thing and it doesn't work out as well as I expected, and then do another thing and see how that works, and then do a third thing, we're far better off doing all three things at first. They may be sloppy, but one of them is going to come. One of them is going to show itself to be something of merit, right? And now I've gotten a whole bunch of time that I would have spent going sequentially, and I'm doing it simultaneously. So simultaneous action on multiple fronts versus sequential on one front, one after the other, I think allows you to see what's working and what's not working, and then you can focus on that thing and drive that particular ball forward.
Really good answer.
I love your sharing that, Don, because I work with so many multipreneurs, and there's a society message right now that you're supposed to only focus on one thing at a time. And the point that I make is, especially with multipreneurs, is don't be sticking your other ideas in the closet and pretending that you're not giving them attention in order to please other people into thinking you're only focusing on one thing. You know, let's get the stepkids out of the closet, get everybody around the dinner table together, let's see what the commonality is among them and how we harmonize it, and then we can say, good, now how much of my attention day in, day out, or week in, week out is going to each of these, and why? Is that I'm trying to craft or create or learn by pursuing that, and it's right in line with what you were just talking about. Is you if there's multiple opportunities, you've got to be able to evaluate them, and not just sometimes you can do it intellectually, and sometimes you've got to be living the experience of working with it in order to uncover which is going to be the more profitable, more productive, more worthwhile endeavor to pursue.
Well, you know, what you're talking about now to some extent is something near and dear to my heart, which is opportunity selection, right? How do I set up criteria? How do I vet an opportunity to look at it and see what, you know, what I really do want to pursue? It might take me a minute, but if you'd be interested, I would give you like kind of a breakdown on that that might be useful.
Oh, I'd love it. Please.
Okay, so when you look at what is going to produce a sound means of making money, okay, there's certain things that you want to look at. Number one, is this commensurate with what I want to achieve? In other words, if I want to make $5 million, a pet grooming salon in Warwich, Connecticut is probably not going to do it, right? So is it commensurate? Is it in line with? Is it congruent with what I want to achieve? And if it is congruent with what I want to achieve, does it hold the promise of prospect in terms of profit? And is it scalable? Can I scale it? Can I grow it? Okay. Is there a rational connection, like a congruency with my goals and objectives? And very important, I want to say more importantly, but not more importantly, but very importantly, can I get speed in this opportunity? Is there a way that I can make it happen quickly? Because speed is a big deal in almost any business and every business I've ever looked at or been a part of or consulted. I would say the second point, so those are subsections of the first point of being commensurate. I would say something like making sure that opportunity is in harmony with my skills and strengths, that it allows for that speed to money. Right, it allows for something that lines up with my skills and strengths, because then I have an ease of operation. I don't have to, you know, really retrain or retool. I don't have to go against my natural inclinations and force myself to do things that I know I'm not good at. And there's a certain there's a certain benefit that you get, I think, with dealing with people, and there's a certain magnetism, if you will, that happens when you are flowing in your strengths. People know it. They sense it. You're confident. They get that confidence, and you attract those people and those things that want that excellence, that want that flow of someone that's functioning in their strengths. I would say that you want a business or an opportunity perhaps that's exploitable with your resources that you currently have, or, and this is the more important part, or that you have access to other people's resources with. Because everyone always looks at their resources. Well, what do I have? Well, that's resources. That's not resourcefulness. Resources are X. They're limited. Resourcefulness, on the other hand, is a very deep well. And I can start to think about other people's customers' lists. Who could I joint venture with? How could I get this leveraged into X, Y, or Z opportunities? So that resourcefulness and having the resources and being able to capitalize on other people's resources, I think, is important.
I call it your network of resources, because you really want to think about that in several levels deep of resources. So who do you know, and who do they know, and even who can you reach because of the second level, about three levels deep. And it's really a big deal when you look at it from that perspective, because it can literally help you to get any asset or anything that your business might need to accomplish your objectives.
Yeah, it's like the Richter scale of business. Like, people don't realize it, but when they measure earthquakes on the Richter scale, okay,
mm-hmm.
if you had a 1 to a 10, between a 5 and a 6, right, a 5 and a 6 on a regular scale of measurement is, you know, a little bit more than 5. Okay, but on the Richter scale, an earthquake at a 5.0, a 5.1 is twice as intense as a 5.0. And a 5.2 is twice as intense as a 5.1. So a 5.2 is four times bigger order of magnitude than just a 5.0. Okay, so when it comes to resources, there's almost a comparable measurement, right? Because by accessing this individual circumstance on this opportunity, they have a Rolodex that they've accumulated over 25 years, right? There may be tremendous, you know, I hate the word being overused of synergy, but there may be tremendous overlap or interplay there. And learning how to take the relationships that you have or that you can develop, and developing those relationships is so key, because at the end of the day, every business works off of some form or fashion of relationship. It just by definition, that's what we do. We're people. We relate. You know, no one ever goes and buys a house on an island just because they want to be away from everybody, or a precious few of us do. You know, solitary confinement is a penalty in prison. It's not a benefit, right? So being able to go in. And another thing too, Gina, by the way, I was going to say is, when you look at opportunity, try and find something that's free of imposed external limitations in economics. Like, there's limitations on pricing, okay? There's limitations. Like, the mortgage industry now has limitations on pricing, for example. You can only make so much money, right? There's X limitations. Same thing in a number of different industries. There's margin limitation. There's timing limitation. There's access to customer limitation. Like, if you're selling products and you're selling through X, you don't have a customer list because you're selling through X and they're building a customer list. That's an important part of that business equation and an important part of that opportunity, because it leads to the next point, which is to say, is the business able to both produce income and build equity? Will this opportunity build something for me more than income, right? Will it build future benefit in some form or fashion that I can either, one, monetize and sell or turn into, you know, some other asset or cash at some point, or will it not? Because you might have a slower growing opportunity or a higher risk opportunity, perhaps, that seems less advantageous, but it has an equity component that builds value over time. And people oftentimes tend for the cash flow rather than focusing on the equity opportunity as well. Does that make sense? I mean, is a useful set of tools?
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think that was great. So, Linda, I'm going to let you pick Dawn's brain a little bit. You're someone who has such an immense background in both marketing and systems. What do you want to know from someone like that?
You know, one of the things I think would be really valuable for our listeners is, Dawn, because you've been in so many industries and you've served so many industries, I think one of the insights and learnings you've had that would be so valuable for folks is, when is the dog wagging the tail or the tail wagging the dog? We live in this internet marketing age where so many people become enthusiastic because they're drawn in by the marketing messages they see other people using, that they lose sight what's the actual business opportunity and what's a really darn clever marketing approach.
Yeah. I want to be cautious about how I answer this because I have strong opinions on it. Okay. Let's be frank about it to start with and say that there are times when you're marketing a product. Let me paraphrase into blunt and direct terms what I think you were alluding to, either intentionally or unintentionally. You have times when you're marketing a product, and you have other times where you can look at something and see that the marketing is the product. Okay? So, for example, there's a reason that the Federal Trade Commission has a real set of issues with the business opportunity market, right? When I'm selling a business opportunity, let's say on the one end of the spectrum I'm selling a Quiznos franchise or I'm selling a Jiffy Lube franchise, I'm selling a business that happens to be in a franchise format, right? But it's clearly a business opportunity, okay? On the other hand, if I'm selling somebody's story that they found this magic book on the side of the railroad tracks that described how to day trade, and now they're making, you know, $14 million a week sitting around in their pajamas, you know, and they have their 8-year-old kid on the computer trading stocks, and they're out in the backyard at the pool, okay? Theoretically, that's a business opportunity, but really, I'm not buying any real opportunity. As a rule, I'm buying the story, right? And then there's some stuff behind it, in theory, that provides me the opportunity. But there's a fine line, because if I said to you, if you can lift 300 pounds, I have a job that will pay you $1,000 a day to lift 300 pounds three times a day, you know, a foot off the floor. But if I know going in that you can't lift 300 pounds because you only weigh 120 pounds, or at least the probability of it is almost non-existent, then I'm a little disingenuous in offering that to you, to put it in the most charitable light possible. At the same time, if 5% of the people can take advantage of an opportunity, and it's probably typically less than that, with a really good opportunity, they take advantage of that, and they do fabulously well, to me, they're not the exception to the rule, okay? They're the exception to the fact of the circumstance, but they prove the efficacy, the effectiveness of it. I could take Gina's system and not do it properly and fail at it, and I have no right to scream at Gina, because there are many, many, many people who do it with X, Y, and Z, you know, rigor, and get the same results. It's repeatable. It's a system over and over and over. So I think a lot of times you have to really be able to kind of cut the wheat from the chaff. Is that some of what you were addressing, or did I take it off on a different tangent?
It works beautifully. You know, our conversations here, both, you know, here on our show as well as elsewhere, the value of them is climbing into people's experience and insights and being able to bring it out into the conversation. And, you know, what's so important is we're living in a world nowadays where media is making us surrounded by marketing messages. And if you think about social media, it's become, you know, I for many years I loved reading Lindsay Davis's books about ancient Rome, And in particular, her protagonist was a private investigator who the stories described Roman life really beautifully, including going down to the bathhouse and hearing conversations, you know, in the bath pool 15 feet away, or walking through the forum and seeing, you know, some handbill that somebody's posted on the side of a building and a group of people clustered around it muttering about it. And we forget that that used to be the pace at which information moved from one person to the next. And we're living
right.
in a where technology has us not getting 10 messages a day, not even 10 messages an hour anymore. It's 10 messages a minute from people who already know us, let alone the people we don't really know. So there's such an intensity in flooding that it becomes mesmerizing and critical. Thinking goes out the door and everybody's hungry for opportunity. You know, it's part of the human DNA of, you know, we're looking for that perfect opportunity with the least amount of work, with the perfect red berry, with exactly the sugar we need right now. And now we're flooded with those kinds of media inputs day in and day out and day in and day out. And you know, when we're talking with entrepreneurs, part of the challenge is how do we find the information we need, how do we leverage the information we need, and how do we shut off the flood to stay focused on getting done what needs to get done. So, you know, in the examples you were using with the business opportunity, somebody wants to pursue that business opportunity, great, but it's going to be done with elbow grease and time. It's not going to be pull one lever and you just made $100,000.
Well, let's. I'm going to say one thing too that I thought was interesting on what you had, and then remind me. I'm going to come back to the lever for $100,000. Okay, so
yep.
if I diverge, bring me back. Okay. One thing, statistically and scientifically proven, we know for a fact that one of the things that builds trust, even though it shouldn't, one of the things that builds trust is repetition. Okay, so someone seeing a marketing message, whether that marketing message has integrity of content or not, just seeing it more often, right, produces more results than if it's seen less often, right?
Mm-hmm.
So repetition is something that creates familiarity and some level of trust that shouldn't necessarily do that if critical thinking were in play. The more times you see an inaccurate or improper offer, right, shouldn't make it easier for you to buy or take X action, but it does. So that's a flaw in the way the human brain works. It's the difference between kind of the lizard brain, the low-level brain, and the supposedly rational, you know, frontal cortex and frontal lobe or what have you, the higher brain activity. It's another point entirely. But the lever, the $100,000 sit there in the chair and smoke a cigar, pull the lever, make $100,000 thing, this is really what you're seeing now is you're seeing so much of that and so much intensity towards that, the get-rich-quick kind of model. And I'm all for getting rich quick. Don't get me wrong, okay? I think what we're really talking about is get rich easy, right? Get rich effortless. Get rich without having to expend the effort that so many other people have expended in getting rich or successful or whatever your particular term, or the take a pill versus get on the treadmill. I mean, the idea that you could have something advertised like a fat pill, like you're going to take a pill and lose fat, should already tell you that we live in a society. Now, I guess human beings probably haven't changed. There probably has always been
right.
that inclination. There's always been that inclination. It's just that now marketing has put that so front and center, and it plays so wonderfully effectively on the desire for that silver bullet, that quick solution, not even quick, but easy solution. And the focus on the easy and the focus on the effortless, while it makes good marketing copy, really, frankly, doesn't address the reality of the fact that sometimes really good things take a lot of work. Really important things take a lot of effort, okay? No one is trying to buy the machine that's going to help them raise well-adjusted kids. It's too important to try that machine, okay? It's too important to, you know, put that in your world and maybe have it not work, because we value the the results for our children. But that same individual might buy the fat pill, you know, or the instant business success in a box, here you are. And this is not to say that all those boxes that are shrink-wrapped up on somebody's, you know, bookcase right now that have never been opened from whatever seminar they took. I personally think if you took, I don't know, maybe a very large percentage of those, if you just did the thing, maybe the thing isn't perfect, maybe it's not effective, maybe it's, you know, maybe it's not everything that's cracked up to me, but in the process of taking action, moving forward, okay, you never stumble backwards, you stumble forwards. So by moving forward, taking action, right, you might find something else. In trying to leverage that opportunity, which maybe isn't the best opportunity, you bump into somebody else who's doing something else, or you find a tweak on it, or maybe you come across somebody else who tried that and said, yeah, you know what, I didn't do well at that, but let me tell you about what I'm doing now. You're moving through, forward, through time and through space and around other people, trying to accomplish a goal focused on that. And when you, you know, whatever you focus on is going to expand in your world. Whatever you're focused on is going to expand, good, bad, or indifferent. So by becoming someone who doesn't just look for the lever, but that actually goes out and actively starts pulling levers, right, attempting to work and engage, now you've taken something and created action and activity from it, which has the possibility for success versus the absolute guarantee of failure that is associated with lack of activity.
Beautifully
or
put.
I should say absence of activity.
Yeah,
absence
beautifully put. You know, in thinking about this world of marketing nowadays where technology is enabling us to try so many things, try them rapidly and so on, in particular in this world of search engine optimization, are you seeing trends, are you seeing shifts from, you know, what's become outdated and no longer is serving and what's coming up on the horizon that are the things people should be going out and trying or incorporating?
I would go so far as to say this. If you look at the internet, let's say, you know what, mid-90s, right? Early 90s. Right?
Barely anybody had an email or a login in those days.
Right. If you look at the internet and you took the curve of the rate of change in search engine optimization slash how ranking and how presence on the internet is defined and determined by, for example, Google, okay, the curve would go, you know, relatively smoothly up until about, oh, I don't know, last couple, 3 years, it's radically changed. But the introduction of things like social media and sharing and looking at how people actually use information rather than being purely keyword-driven or largely, I should say, largely keyword and backlink-driven is probably right now is the largest amount of change any of us as professionals have ever seen in this space. I was talking to Gina the other day, and she was informing me of some things that she learned recently that I hadn't even heard about. And we do this for a vast number of people. We do it successfully, and we guarantee our work. So anything we can have as a competitive advantage, believe me, we're taking full advantage of. And this is something that just yesterday, you know, was newly, I don't say revealed, but, you know, newly integrated. Someone figured out, and now it's working its way through. Still very few, relatively small number of people doing that, but the old Google used to be about the number of people that were linking back to you was an indicator of how well thought of you were, how relevant you were in their terms, to grossly oversimplify it, to other people, because there were people linking back to you, right? Well, there are now so many other ways for them to see a blog post that is taken by somebody and distributed because they liked it to their friends on Facebook and through this or that methodology. It says a lot more about how people value that content and how relevant that content is than necessarily purely and simply who's linking back to them. It's not to say that the linking isn't still important, but when you have new, it's like dropping a pebble in the pond. So you drop the social media pebble in the Google pond. let's say, what, 5-6 years ago, maybe. There's
right.
a little ripple, okay?
Right.
And now it's a tsunami, okay? They can't quickly integrate enough all the changes, and there's change even internal to the social media world that's happening rapidly. So those ripples now, you know, roll through everything. It's a very complex and becoming increasingly complex process. Most of the people that were gaming the system previously, and by that I won't go into a lot of detail, but they were basically using a lot of strategies that created what Google thought or appeared to want, a lot of backlinks and this and that. As soon as Google changes the algorithm, right, then those sites drop from, you know, number 3 on page 1 to page 26. That's not a sustainable business. That's not a business, in fact. That's a web ranking that can monetize for a period of time, but your business is never in your hands, right? So it's a very slippery slope, and we believe that using good best practices across the board such that you're deeply embedding in the processes that Google likes and is favorable and friendly towards and encourages makes sense. Content, to a very large degree, is absolutely going to continue to be king. So if you're a good creator of content, content that's not just voluminous but useful, desirable, that people value, it's becoming clearer and easier for Google to determine what people do and don't value and what they do and don't think is relevant because of all the interconnectivity now of social media and some of the search engine option or search engine technology.
So, I love what you're saying. You know, 6 months ago, Gina and I were online, and we had a list of 20 different gurus, luminaries, authorities in a couple of industries, and we were looking at the analytics for how they were doing, and they literally showed no analytics because one change in Google's algorithm wiped them off the map.
Yeah.
That's exactly correct.
Yeah. And now
the one thing that is likely to remain consistent for quite some time to come is that if you really understand what Google's all about and don't use those tricks that are really gaming the system, you really will always end up coming out on the good side, even if they do change the algorithm. And it's very simple. What Google is all about is giving the best possible experience to its searchers. And all of its changes in its algorithm and how it ranks websites and what it looks like, it's all based on Google finding better and better ways in an automated system to serve the searchers in the best light possible. So if you come from that place of service in everything that you do, both on your website and off your website, you're always likely to be on Google's good side.
You know, I have a great analogy for you, Gina. It's the difference between being an importer and a smuggler, right?
Oh,
an importer brings in goods from outside the country into a given area, okay? Well, a smuggler does the same thing, right? But when they catch smugglers, they punish them, and there's a stigma attached to it and associated with it because they're doing it through illegitimate means. And I think it's the illegitimacy, and I use the term, you know, in a somewhat loaded manner. Everyone is entitled to whatever methodology they want to pursue. But it's illegitimate in the eyes of Google, okay? And it's an intent to game the system rather than work within the system. And the days of gaming the system, at least in a quick and easy manner, those I think are probably pretty much over. You know,
I think
it takes
so too. It does.
There are people that we know that are spending 4 and 5 hours a day, every day, doing the necessary things to get their ranking to where they need it to be. Now, I will say one thing that I do think is a useful business, I guess a business trend, if you will. So as things get more complex, okay, the reason that we don't have any Thomas Jeffersons around who were, you know, architects and farmers and you know, historians and surveyors or, you know, whatever the case might be, is because it used to be that you could have a pretty well-rounded approach and do a lot of different things well. As specialization has become greater and greater and greater, and to excel or to be at the top of your game in a given field or area becomes greater and greater, that means that your ability to do other things well, typically speaking, becomes reduced. It's substantively less possible to do that. So someone who used to be able to do, for example, all their marketing, now the specialization that's associated with AdWords management or the specialization that's associated with optimization on the web or retargeting, in order to be competitive, especially at scale, that skill set is now so much more intense and so much more required that the person that was doing that successfully before, it has grown beyond their scope and ability to engage consistently at the level of effectiveness they were at previously. 20 years ago, you could write decent sales copy and put it out in a letter and bring people into your restaurant. Okay? That same sales copy today on a really hardcore optimized sales page would be laughable. Okay, so the person that used to be able to do X now doesn't have the ability to do X. So the trend is succeeding by virtue of finding as many pieces of that puzzle that can be done for you, or maybe done with you, but typically done for you, not because there's a laziness or a lack of desire or willingness, but there's typically a lack of specialization at a very high level and a lack of time. Because, like, I remember as a kid that my parents would come home at 5 o'clock and we would have dinner around the table and we would watch The Wonderful World of Disney, and they had a chance to sit down and read the newspaper, and there were no pagers, there were no cell phones going off, there was no email to check. You know, they sat down and read the paper. And I can't even tell you the last time I did that. I don't know about the two of you, but it's not my typical approach.
I'm waiting for people to make the new rule that you actually have to deposit your cell phone at the door when you come in.
Right, like guns in the old West. You know, you go into the bar and put your guns in, you know, yeah, right at the front. And, you know, there'd be some people that would keep the equivalent of a Derringer, you know, in their pocket, right? Their small
exactly.
cell phone, because they couldn't do without it. But I think that the trend as a business of taking things off of already overburdened individuals or businesses, taking that piece of it off, is becoming a really, really productive place to be. So whereas you now see, you go through the airport, for example, there is a maintenance service that services the airport. It's not the airport employees. There's a reason for that, because somebody that's doing just X can do it more effectively and more efficiently, manage the risks better, work flex time better than having employees who do the maintenance at the airport as far as the cleaning of the services and what have you. Well, they're, you know, 1/30th of the employees, okay? So there's this efficiency and this focus that comes with kind of a niche, sort of a laser-pointed, laser-focused thing. So as a business, part of what you want to ask yourself is, what can I do? What do I need done, number one, and what can I do where my business becomes less of a generalist and more of a specialist for solving a given problem or set of problems in a finite way for a group of people who, one, can afford it, two, can understand the value of it, and three, are willing to pay me for excellent results. Because, you know, everybody's either writing a time check or a money check. You're writing one of those two checks. It's a matter of choosing. And if you're picking your market properly, you'll pick a market where someone has the option of which check they want to write. And as such, a certain percentage of them will be available to you as prospective or future customers, and they will write you money checks so that they don't have to write time checks. And it's that kind of positioning when you look at opportunities, when you look at businesses. Like, I would shudder with the idea of going and opening a shoe store in a brick-and-mortar location in Main Street, you know, Bumbalow, Missouri, right? Because everyone I see is shutting down. I think there was something like – I heard a stat that there was like 20,000 independent shoe stores like 13 years ago, and there's like 3,000 now, okay? Why? Very simple. Scale, right? So certain businesses in and of themselves are just not terribly attractive. I think an attractive element is problem solving for people in a way that's significant and has all of those qualities I earlier elaborated upon. But one of the great areas for that is looking to take things off of people's plate that you can do for them better than they can do it optimally, maybe in some cases even more efficiently, more effectively, some cases even cheaper relative to their total costs, time and everything else. So that's, you know, that's a thought on how that plays in.
Well, I want to make sure that we don't run out of time before we tell folks how they can find Don. Do we have a link for them, Linda?
We are sending people straight to the Vectis Group at VECTIS Group, VectisGroup.com.
Awesome.
Yeah, there's certainly some contact opportunities in there. We have a predictions report that would be useful, kind of our thoughts about where 2013 is going and reference to marketing and what have you. I have to tell you, I have just enjoyed myself. This has been a kind of a free-ranging, open-form conversation that was pretty cool. I like this.
And one that's really helpful for our listeners. We have everything from people who are brand new entrepreneurs just starting out to people that have been entrepreneurs for quite some time transitioning into new directions in their business and just about everything in between. So very, very helpful for them to have gotten the words of wisdom that you've shared with them. Do you have any specific recommendations for somebody just getting started?
Take action. Take action. Or, you know, let me put that another way. Take action, right? You have to move forward. And if you move forward and you bump into something, okay, move to the left or move to the right. You stub your toe, you hurt it, jump around a little bit, yell and scream and move on, right? You want to avoid catastrophic holes that you fall into that you can't get out, but you have to move forward. And I think that, like, to me, action is the lever that exists in our lives. You know, that we lift the heavy stone of the nearly impossible with that daily. That is, to me, the key in most things is take action. It'll never be perfect. It'll never be ready 100%. It'll never be where you want it. And as an entrepreneur, you have to be mature enough to say, sometimes I'm going to have to venture out before everything is perfectly in line. And that's, you know, greatness is in that.
Oh, great advice. And for our listeners, Don and I are doing a lot of work together. We are on the phone pretty much every day right now. So if you're really looking for help in figuring out your direction, where you should be going, what you should be doing, get in touch with one of us. We can absolutely help you get that direction that you need so that you really can go out and take action. Thank you so much, Don, for sharing all of your wonderful words of wisdom with our listeners today. This has been great and enjoyable for me as well.
I very much enjoyed it. Thank you for the opportunity.
And Linda, thank you so much for arranging this. Linda and I will be back next week at noon Eastern on Tuesday for another episode of Breakthrough Directions here on Blog Talk Radio. Have a great week, everybody.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.